Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running the design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California, but currently roaming the world on projects.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's gorgeous here.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey. And it's nice here, too. You know, so we occasionally get good weather on the East Coast.
Alrighty, so today, grids and guidelines, they're two PowerPoint features that I think, well, very few people know of or use. They are somewhat hidden, which could explain why they're not used as much. And most people working in PowerPoint, I don't think they have, they don't know their origins or their use in traditional print design. For print design, the idea of using grids in a layout, it's common. It's my background. It's what I learned on. It's what you do. And even if you cannot immediately recognize them when looking at something that's been designed, chances are that virtually every professionally designed print layout is making use of a grid in some way. The same for gutters. They're a standard element used for specific print design projects. And they were kind of adapted for video projects becoming the safe view area. But often, they're overlooked and not addressed in presentation design. So when it comes to presentation design, grids, guides, and gutters, while not always a part of the design process for many presentationists, they are a valuable resource. Join Nolan, Sandy, and myself, Troy Collar, as we get a bit geeky on the design side and talk about how these three traditional design tools can be leveraged in presentation design. And what's even more kind of exciting for us about this topic or this conversation, this entire episode, this topic was inspired by a listener email sent to us.
All right. So let's explain the concept of grids, guides, gutters. And when I say let's explain, I'm including myself in that. So explain to me the concept of grids, guides, and gutters.
Okay. So I'll kick us off because I come from a very structured, rigid print design background. I mean, working in the print shops, doing the pre-pro there, and then doing design work. So I know. So when I was learning design, it was not only here's the rules of what you do, but I was literally at the printers to see how they impacted the design and could hear the pressmen yelling very bad language in many languages about when things were not set up correctly. Because when you do a print run on traditional printing and things go wrong, you've wasted thousands to tens of thousands of dollars. And a lot of times it goes back to the designer. So, I have this nagging thing over the back of my shoulder whenever I'm designing that things always need to be right because it can impact other people. Now, this conversation, I will preface, we should say this. These are traditional print design rules. And there's lots of books. There's lots of, there's a lot about them. And we're kind of adapting them to design. So this is a little bit of an abstract because PowerPoint didn't really implement them. I think we'll talk about this in a few cases. The way that they are implemented in, I'll just say like InDesign or prior to that Quark Express or prior to that PageMaker, there are rules for how these things are used and we're adapting them in PowerPoint design. So when we talk about grids, guides, and gutters, they're all a part of professional design, but you really need them for continuity across like a multi-page document if you're doing print design, or you can think of it across multi-slide presentation because they keep that continuity there. Or in the print design world, it could be across all elements of a large campaign. The handout, the booklet, everything. It gives a sense of continuity. Well, the similar concept would be a good template with a great grid or guides to align or make sure things are aligned with the same I'll say left edge indent. You know, it provides a consistency across all of the presenters. So the concept is simple. All three of these elements, they're to create rules for the design, and they're to create consistency in the design. And we're going to talk about how to make that happen, or how we can use those in presentation design. Okay, I said a lot. Anybody else, please?
Well, when I talk about grids, I include guides and gutters because I think they're part of it. But
yes,
on a very, very high level, grids help bring order to visual design, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. And I'm surprised at how many, you talked about print design, and so many trained designers are trained on grids in school. I mean, they should be pros at it. But I'm always surprised at when it comes to creating slides, they seem to forget about grids. Not only do grids create order for a slide, like you said, Troy, they create order from slide to slide, which helps eliminate, and we've talked about this before, cognitive overload or, you know, frustration. It's behind the scenes. As a matter of fact, they're usually invisible to the viewer.
Behind the scenes is a, you know, that's how I should have said it. They're all design elements that are behind the scenes. You don't see them.
Yes.
You acknowledge that they're in there by just the design itself. Yeah.
Unless you're Mondrian. Is that how you say that artist's name?
I think it's Mondrian.
The grid guy.
Mondrian? Yeah.
Mondrian. Yeah. Or Microsoft, they came out years ago with a very, very obvious grid layout when they were doing their flat design. Yeah. Then it's really obvious.
Yeah. I mean, it's even the most sort of organic layouts, professionally designed stuff, 99% certain that there is a grid underneath, even if you can't sort of initially pick it out. But if you see like a organic design poster, for example, there's most likely a grid under there. Mm-hmm. Let's get down to some terminology and stuff. Let's leave gutters for later, but let's start with guides in PowerPoint. These are what most people, I think, are generally familiar with, right? You right click, turn on guides, or you can get to it from the view tab. There's a little checkbox there. Those guides, those sort of dotted line or dash line things, those guides can be used by themselves and individually, or they can be used to create a grid system for your whole deck or on particular slides if you duplicate them and start using multiple versions of those. Or you can also use PowerPoint's built-in grid feature, which we'll talk about, but to be perfectly honest, I never use, and I didn't even realize until we were putting this episode together that you can customize the defaults for them.
Oh, so, that's the only way you can use them, but we'll talk about that.
Well, one of the reasons I didn't even know that is because grid lines are not on the Mac. Now, there is Snap to Grid on the Mac, so if somebody on the PC side has set it up for you, it'll snap to those. But
oh, that's interesting.
You cannot view them. As far as I can tell, you can't view
them. I don't
think
I've ever noticed that, but what? Interesting.
Yeah, you can't view them or
I might have to step aside and go, oh, I don't have a MacBook Pro with me here. Okay, I'll believe you. It's not available.
Yeah,
but they are available. They kind of like recognize them, but you can't modify them.
It's one of those things where they exist in the file. Like a lot of things, just the UI doesn't allow you to get to them on the Mac.
Interesting.
So, anyway.
Well, let's tell our listeners how to find them, though. Kind of started on it, Nolan, but let's go through each of the elements. Grid. No, start with guides.
Okay, so I'll take guides.
Okay.
Because Nolan started it, so it's easy for me.
Okay, go ahead.
Guides are definitely the most common element. I think people will recognize there are guides. I think they're the easiest to turn on within the interface. So if you turn on guides, and I'll talk about it in a second, you'll get two of them. Every file has two preset guides. They're both at the zero point of the X and the Y axis. So you get a crosshair and you can multiply them. You can move them. You can do all kinds of things with them. Three ways you can turn them on. The easiest way for me is just to right click on the edit space, that area outside of the slide. And there's a grids and guides drop down or menu there. And that actually drops down to let you add guides as well as turn them on and off. You know, you can see them there. The other way you can do it is in the ribbon. And this is really funny. It took me, actually, I had to ask Nolan and Sandy, like, where do you find these on the on the ribbon? I just don't do it. Because I have multiple ways of getting to guides. It's really easy. Go to the view tab. There's a show section. There's literally a checkbox for grids, grid lines and guides right there. And then the third way, guides are so important to me and so used. I literally have the guides button right on my QAT. So that's generally how I turn them on and off, because I do like to design with them and without them within the same project. So a lot of times, because guides are a snap element, and I sometimes need to nudge things around potentially. They add more visual clutter when you're looking at the overall design, like how the audience is going to see it without the extra stuff. So I do turn them on and off quite often.
So guides are flexible. You
correct.
Can add and delete and move as needed. Grids, on the other hand, which you access the same way, right click or view tab show, they are not flexible, except I think you can adjust the width.
You can adjust quite a bit about them. You can adjust the spacing.
Click and drag like you can with guides.
No. They're right. A grid, like they're a checkerboard.
It's all mathematical.
But the checkerboard doesn't have to be perfect squares either. I mean, you can make that, make them like rectangles. You can make them custom spacings. You can actually, can you make them rectangles? Let me think about that. I know you can do the custom spacing. There are some options within it, and you can only turn them on and off on that ribbon, and then the settings are kind of in that legacy pop-up dialog box. Let's hear display grid on side. There's custom spacing. There's spacings, preset spacings, and then there's custom. No, they are always a square. I'm sorry. They are always a square.
Okay.
And then gutters. they're not really a baked-in feature of PowerPoint. In fact, I don't think the word gutter appears anywhere in the UI.
It does.
It does? It does?
Yeah, sure. When you are only with text, though. So when you are adding multiple columns to a text, then you can adjust the gutter.
No, I think it says spacing.
Oh, does it?
I'm going to go to format.
It does not say gutter. It says spacing, which I think we'll get to.
Text box.
Oh, my bad.
Columns. Oh, it does say spacing, but that's what it is. It's
my
a gutter.
Bad.
It is a gutter, right. Okay. But we're going to get to that. Also, gutters can be interchangeable with the word margin as well, which we'll talk about with a plugin in which you can set the margin. But anyway, so yes, gutters are not really a part. They're more a concept, which we'll get to. All right. Okay. So when you're setting up this grid, what do you consider? What do you think about your content, your elements, your audience, color, medium, font? Like what are you thinking about when you're setting up a grid, Troy?
Okay. So grid specific, again, lots of design rules about the use of a grid. Taking it back even a little bit further though, before we go into the actual grid, we're talking about presentation design. So the medium is a presentation, and we kind of also need to know how that presentation is going to be used. So here's my big deal dilemma or issue with this, is that we can't have a set rule because PowerPoint is so flexible. Is it a projected slide? Well, we're going to need a larger grid because things are viewed by an audience. They could be 20, 40, 100 feet away. Is it a print document, which is what we create a lot of? And in that case, we're going to use a tighter grid because it's actually, in this case, going to be exported most likely to a PDF. It could be printed out, and it's going to be a lot more dense content. So the person's viewing it up close. They have more. Actually, that's the second half of it. It's how long are they going to be able to view it? I mean, a projected slide, it's not going to be visible for long. So there's not time for a lot of dense content or a dense grid because that density makes it so we have to interpret a lot more. So you want a larger grid in general, but a print design document, you can get away with a denser grid or a smaller grid. So things to consider is taking a step back and think about what it is, that medium you talked about, Nolan, is how are we going to use this file? And that's going to be a big factor in determining what type of grid I even want to consider.
Right. I think the main thing to think about is how complicated, as you said, how dense you want it to be. We're fixing up a client template right now that was provided to us that actually should bring it up because it's very dense. Let's say, I mean, it's probably off the top of my head, probably a 10 or 12 column. Maybe not that's maybe about 9 or 10 or 11.
It's still
columns.
A lot.
It's you're right.
That's
still
a lot.
And so you bring it up and actually I showed it to one of my people that was working on it, and she said, "Oh, we're going to simplify that, right?" And I said, "Actually, we're not, because this was designed by an agency, and believe it or not, they actually did it fairly well." But I started going through it all, and they really make use of all of that grid. Mm-hmm. I mean, you start looking at everything that was all the slides that were set up; they're making use of it. So I don't want to oversimplify it because they really are making good use of it.
It seems the more columns, the more flexibility you have.
Well, that's true.
Until you get to the point of complexity and how much you have to really identify what you're working with. We should compare notes, Nolan. We're just wrapping up one that's kind of funny. We just wrapped up one and we're just starting one. They're both, I'm going to call them print documents. We're doing them in PowerPoint. All the content's done there, but they're exported as PDFs. And one of them is printed and bound in the financial industry. We have a really dense grid. I mean, our font size in that one, the max font size is 14. And that's for the headlines. I mean, this is a lot of content. I have to open it up. That was really funny. I think we have up to 8 columns across, which is a lot for a slide.
And just to get into the weeds on it, like if you have a 3-column grid, for example, and you've designed everything to it, you could also have a 6-column grid. You could have a 9. I mean, you could just add more divisions to it. If you're not going to use them, I would say don't put it in there. I'm counting it up now. Let's see. So there's a margin, but then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
That's amazing. Well, that's in a horizontal landscape layout. I mean,
Widescreen. Right.
Yeah.
Again, like you turn it on, you start going through the pre-designed slides. You're like, oh, that lines up there. That lines up there. That lines up there. So,
Sandy, what do you say about setting up a grid?
When I'm starting from scratch, I basically look at the content and build a template. Pretty basic that way. But sometimes when I get a cleanup project, I'll look at the grid. I'll create a grid using their existing title and content slide. So it's not really a grid. It's more just a design layout. So for example, I'll use guides around the content placeholder. I'll use guides around the title placeholder so that I can see those on every slide and quickly clean up. I don't know if you want to call it a grid, but it's just a way that I make sure the slides are consistent from slide.
Well, you know what? Maybe I think we're actually aligning on what I was thinking here. So I was going to ask what type of grids are there? And here's my preface to that. There are types or categories of using a grid. One of the ways I use a grid in PowerPoint, which I think is what you're saying, Sandy, is we'll create the grid, but it's actually only used for, we create a grid on a specified size and we use that for setting up our guides so that we have a roadmap to how we want to space apart our guides. So a lot of times we have a really, really dense grid because we know we're going to be doing, like Nolan, the one project you're talking about, we have a grid with, what would the sizing be? It's, we go here and we take it down to one. Again, it's way easier to work in metric on this, by the way. But if we go down to like a 0.04, 1/24th of an inch, no, that's the wrong way. See, my math is not working. If we go to, no, hold on. I'm going to pause here while I actually think this through. How do you get a tiny grid? What would be my math? It's got to be okay. Just, I'm going to go to custom.
Just to jump in, it sounds like you have, and we do this too. We have a grid, predefined grid set up as lines, as PowerPoint lines. And then we use those to very often create the guides to align the guides to that.
Kind of what I'm talking about. We set up the grid and then we just basically use it for setting the guides and then we turn off the grid. We don't use the grid any longer. It created the rule for the guides and the guides are what are used for the design. That's what I was getting at.
Right.
And I don't know if that's a type of grid, but that's a type of use of the grid feature in PowerPoint.
I think
it gives the rule,
way.
The underlying rule for why the guides are there. And it really simplifies it once you think it through. What else?
I think the simplest grids are, let's just say, are made up of equally spaced horizontal and vertical lines. Let's put it that way. Yeah. And the simplest of those is probably PowerPoint's default, which is the 2-column grid, right? You bisect a slide in 2 halves, right? In quarters, basically. That's the default that comes in. I keep saying columns rather than rows because that's generally how things are thought of with grids. But a grid can and usually should also be divided horizontally into rows. So you could have a 2x2 grid with 2 columns and 2 rows. But traditionally, from the print world, you just sort of generally thought in columns because for like newsprint, for example, they just kept going down and down and down. You were more concerned with columns than you were with rows.
Exactly. If you want to simplify it even further, Troy, you mentioned the margins. And so I guess that's what's called a baseline grid. It's basically you set up and you tell your users, you set up your slides and tell your users not to color in the margins, right? A baseline grid. There's the multi-column, which PowerPoint comes with. When you turn on the guides, you end up with the four little squares because you've got a guide down the middle and a guide down the center. There's modular, so that's when you start thinking about columns and rows, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's when you start adding your rows. And then hierarchical, and I don't know if that's specific to PowerPoint. I don't think so, but I use hierarchical a lot because I have a headline and I may have callouts and I have a content area. So those are types of...
Oh, depending on how you define hierarchical, you know, I actually went to poster design because you definitely are using more of a, instead of columns, as you're talking about, Nolan, for like newsprint, poster design, a lot of times you're dividing it into bands or rows. And you know that the top portion of your grid is going to be used for this content, where the very bottom portion of your grid is going to be used for, you know, maybe some of the other types of content. Sometimes it's the legal statement, sometimes it's the author, sometimes it's the recording artist. You know, you want to make sure you get some of the other area there. And then your design actually falls within that gridded line as well. Generally, the middle portion of the grid being the dominant graphic element or the focal point. So Sandy, it does work in presentation design. It does work in different types of print design for certain. Margins are definitely a good way to list these things. And actually, that's kind of one of my pet peeves about PowerPoint's grids is that you can't set the grid to originate from like the upper left-hand corner because that's not the 0-0 point in PowerPoint. You can't change it. So sometimes that kind of messes you up when you're creating. Well, I think we're going to talk about it as gutters in a little bit here, but that becomes a little bit of an issue. But I really think they're used to create that kind of safe view area. In other words, it's an outside parameter area that you want to work. You want all your main focal point content to be inside of it. Again, hitting my microphone there. Kind of that poster design element. You know, you want to know where your focal or your key elements are going to be, and that's in the inner portion of the grid.
There are also some non-standard grids that involve lines that are not horizontal and vertical necessarily. I think the big one most people know is the golden ratio that uses that curve line. Although it uses that curve line, I don't think really meant to align things with it. It's sort of used to then chop up the pages into small, differently sized rectangles. And have you guys heard of the
Fibonacci one?
No. The golden canon grid. That's what it's called. The golden canon grid.
I have not.
So Julie Turberg turned me onto this last year, I think. So this guy created a new type of grid a couple years ago, and we will have a link to it in the resources. He's calling it a golden canon grid, and it's essential. And there's a lot of diagonal lines in it. It's fascinating the way it's created. You basically just start dividing the page and using divided line, diagonal lines, and then keep doing it. And I've used it once or twice, and I haven't used it recently, but it was kind of interesting because it's a different way of, it's sort of surprising at how many ideas it gives you.
Is it for responsive layouts? I mean, what are the purpose of the diagonals?
It leads to less ordered, less evenly spaced grid
more
lines.
More organic, I suppose.
Yes, so it ends up feeling a little more organic. And certainly you can align things to the diagonals, but even if you don't do that, you can see, go to the link, you'll see sort of how he uses it, and it really leads to some cool stuff.
I like this concept.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't know, I haven't heard of this, and no, Julie didn't tell me about it. And I'm actually looking at, I don't have your link, so I just did a quick search, and I've got a little animated GIF that shows something. So it's basically the core of it looks to be that the four corners, you draw a diagonal line from lower left corner to upper right corner, and then it stays constant no matter what the aspect ratio is, and that creates your, it's your grid,
responsive,
which can be squares or rectangles. But yet your design will stay proportionally the same. No, not proportionally. What would the word? This is really interesting.
Isn't it
web design.
Okay.
Totally. Okay. Yeah. Cause you can go from mobile phone. Actually, it'd be great for mobile phones depending on the orientation. Hey, something new. I might bring this to the design team really quick.
Thank you, Nolan.
Cool. So why are grids important in PowerPoint? Let's get back to presentation design. I would say consistency. You know, we mentioned that already. When, you know, we're talking about multiple slides, obviously consistency from slide to slide on a very base level, you know, where are my headings, my headers that are always in the right space, but where are my, you know, pull quotes or where's my image? It always aligns, you know, page, slide to slide. But also I think, like we were just talking about with the golden canon, a grid can end up giving you a lot more ideas as a designer than I think you'd have without them. You know, there's a blank page literally with nothing on it is kind of frightening. To a lot of designers to have nothing to start with. But once you're given a grid, okay, great. You know, I'm going to align this here. No, I'm going to align it to there. And then you end up sort of seeing, like if you've ever, here's a good example. If you've ever had to create a collage of photos on a slide, but but differently sized, or if you wanted to do it, if you just try to align a bunch of images of different sizes and crop them to sort of make them all fit so there's no white space, you're going to pull your hair out and it's going to take a long time and you're also not going to end up with a result that feels right. But if you have a grid there and you just start saying, okay, you know, this rectangle fits to those grid lines and this one is half the size, so it fits to that one, and you just start moving things around, if you always align those to the grid, you're going to end up with something that works and feels nice.
It's a great example. It's perfect.
Well, that's also going to give you, it gives you a structure to work within, but it gives you that consistency across multiple elements. So if you have multiple elements for a project, you know, and you're going to do presentation design, signage, a book jacket cover or something, you know, it gives you that consistency across all the elements. But for the designer in presentation land, it gives them that structure to work within. They have creative realm within a set of boundaries, and everybody's set of boundaries are the same. A huge consistency factor. I mean, massive.
Absolutely. It helps. Bottom line is it helps the audience, but it also helps because it introduces the concept of hierarchy. It, in a way, helps me sell the layouts to my client. I have an answer for everything. Why do you have the title here? Why do you have the content here? Why is the photo like this? And I'm able to go back to the concept of a grid, turn it on, show them how each of the placeholders are designed to the grid. And it comes down to that. Yeah, it works. It comes down to almost the science. It's not just because it looks good. It looks good because it's laid out on a grid.
And in a way, a grid is a limitation, but it's a good limitation, and designers like limitations because it.
Yeah, and that's what Gar Reynolds talks about in his original book, Presentation Zen. If you give yourself constraints, you can almost open up the world to design. It's kind of interesting.
You know, before we move on, I wanted to ask, have you guys ever worked with Medtronic? Like, you know, the huge, largest.
Long, long time ago.
I feel like I have, actually.
So Medtronic, we do actually, it's kind of interesting. We work with Medtronic through a couple of different agencies. They bring us in, production companies, agencies, they bring us in, and we work on different. And Medtronic is the largest medical device manufacturer in the world. We just did an award show for one division, and that division alone is like a almost $2 billion division, and they're considered small. I mean, it's just a massive, massive. So you can actually work. The reason I asked is you can work with Medtronic and never actually, it'd be working with totally separate companies because they're just so massive, you never interact. So we work with at least three different divisions of Medtronic through three different companies, and it's the unique unifying factor, the reason I'm bringing this up, is their style guide is, first of all, intense. It is the most well thought out, well planned, and well executed, and well policed style guide I've ever worked with. And I've worked with lots and lots of corporate style guides. The second thing is the reason that I thought of it immediately, it is the most rigid grid style guide in the world, in my opinion. I mean, it is a crazy, crazy. It's squares within squares and only using basically five different tints of blue and gray. It's crazy. I actually just looked it up. There is a public available brand central web page for them. I don't believe you can get into it like we do to see the actual style guide. But I mean, even from the first page here, you know what? I'll put the link here in our notes. I'm going to pause right now. You guys have to look under over on the right-hand side, resources. I just add Medtronic style guide. Oh. Just click that link. And tell me when you got, and then I'll continue the conversation. Because this thing is so powerful. This is the only company I've ever worked with where PowerPoint just works. Okay, you see the blue boxes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we go. Back onto it. Okay, so I know you guys just opened up the Brand Central thing. It's literally those blues. So color scheme's pretty limiting, and that's one of the harder things to work within. But that grid of boxes, you can then put a box within a box, or you could stack multiple boxes along the bottom of it, but it's a total complete grid box layout, and it's a stacking element. Very, very rigid. The first time we worked on it, now we've actually gone through their several hour brand guideline, training. So that we're qualified to work on their stuff. And it's a great training too, by the way. This company has really got it together. I was like, how the heck are we going to design within this such a rigid, I mean, it's square, it's left justified only, it's this. I mean, there's rules and rules and rules. I think it's the coolest thing to work with now. When we do a project, we hand it out to, you know, 3-4 of our designers to come up with a template for a project, and everything has to fall within the same grid. So we're really, really limited on what we're going to do. And yet we come up with completely different layouts and looks. It's really, really cool. But this is a great example of a company that took the grid probably to the furthest executable and said, this is what we're going to do. Just a cool example. And what's really funny is generally, like you're saying, Nolan, you think of a grid as being kind of stifling to design. Mm-hmm. Completely freeing, because everybody knows the rules they got to work within, and then you get really creative to be unique within it. I will throw the link to their Brand Central style guide, because it's publicly available. It's just a thing to look at, but it's just a really cool a project for us in many ways, where, you know, it directly relates to this. Without a grid, we're lost on this type of design. What else were we talking about? I totally got sidetracked with this because you just brought this.
Setting up guides in PowerPoint to create our grid. So there I think a few ways to do this. It's time now for our regular plug for U-Tools, the U-Tools add-in.
Yes.
Because the U-Tools add-in, which again is Mac and PC, although this feature is only on the PC, unfortunately. But there
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a killer. There's a killer grids. Part of U-Tools, a little feature that is a whole dialog box that lets you mathematically insert your grid. Now it inserts guides. So you say, I want to, you know, a 4x3 column grid with, you know, 1/2-inch margins and, you know, 1/4-inch gutters in between the columns. And you just click, 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 click. And you can set it to your slide. You can set it to layouts. You can set it to the master. We'll get into that, 3 different types of grids. And
I will also point out it works in inches. Metric, centimeters,
or metric.
And points. It actually can let you work in points. So you can take your, so we've actually opened up provided InDesign files, said, what's the points, plug it in here, and we create a slide using the same values because it can does the conversion for you. It's awesome.
So that's changed the way how I create grids. So no more like manually moving the lines back and forth and trying to zoom in. So is, you know, it's 1.01. I want to get to, you know, now it's 0.99. I want to get to one, you know, that kind of back and forth. Hell.
Jamie, don't hate me. I can't believe I haven't used it.
Of my gosh, this is going to change. Now, Sandy, here's the big thing. Cause you like seeing the grid on your slide, the actual PowerPoint checkerboard grid. It doesn't do that. It adds guides in a grid layout. And we'll talk about it in a minute, but it even does them at slide level, master slide level. You know, so it kind of defines which type of guides are there. And when I was getting frustrated there a few moments ago, trying to remember how to make a tight grid. Yeah, we don't do it with PowerPoint's native one. We use this tool. And I just figured it could be done in PowerPoint. So it's U-Tools. It's a part of his whole package, right? You can't buy it as a standalone. It's just called guides. It's awesome. Amber at our design team lives by it. She's the first person on our team to kind of like really delve into it. And all of a sudden we all kind of started like, hey, how'd you do that? How'd you do that so fast? And then we kind of all adopted it.
How do you do it, Sandy?
Well, okay, so don't judge. And this is for those people out there who don't have Jamie's add-in, which they should. I highly recommend it. But
or if you're on a Mac.
I have used tables to set up my grids.
Oh, that's a totally smart way to do it.
Yeah, and then I'll build the table the way I want in the slide master and layout, and I add the guides to match. So that's a way to do it.
Okay, that works.
Well, so no, the reason that's really cool is if you haven't done it is guides snap to the table cells, you know, your row and bands.
It's weird.
They kind of snap to it faster than you having to like zoom in and, you know, kind of figure it out. Yeah. So I have done that actually, Sandy, but not to build a grid. It's more for when I create a custom slide layout and I know I want guides for that one slide. I've often thrown a table in there just so I have that consistency, you know.
Sure.
But using it as a grid would instantly made sense as soon as you said it. That's actually a great.
Well, and you know how grids, even though that we can put them on masters now, older versions, they're on top and they can get lost and people mess them up. Sometimes in my when I create a template, I will include the table in a layout with instructions on how to set up their own grid.
Mm-hmm. So very cool. So what type of grids do you end up generally using? Like, do you have a go-to, like?
Hierarchical. So my headline will
Are you looking for a size or a type, Nolan? What do you think?
Size, type, okay. I guess. Do you normally do 2, 3, 4 columns, 5, 6, 12 columns?
I don't know. I usually do hierarchical, but then the content, then I also do a 3 column usually.
So we make a grid, which is a checkerboard across it, and then we decide the columns have to align to the grid, whether they be columns vertically or rows, you know, hierarchical sections or bands. So like the section, the title area, if you will, that's going to be based at the bottom of it's going to be based on the grid. So we'll use a little bit. Hold on, because I just opened up a blank presentation. This is a bad way to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Jump over here, go to grids, and I'm going to go to the, is it half inch or is that too small? Whoops. Hold on. I guess I have to actually view it. Darn it. I'm going to use a half inch. So a little bit larger grid. And then we're going to use those banded lines for where we make our columns. And for content, we're going to do a 3 or 4 column for a presentation design. So things can be on the left half or the left 2/3, on the right 2/3, half and half would be the 4 columns. So yeah.
Yeah.
Would that be right? So if I take it, hold on. Let me think this through. Yeah. If I take the original and I half it, that becomes 1, 2, 3. Okay, so 4 to 5 columns. Sorry, I was wrong. I'm going to move it up. 4 to 5 columns now that I'm counting it.
Can everyone in our audience see Troy's fingers and the wheels in his
totally
head turning?
I pointed to the slide. I'm very visual. I'm very doodle-oriented. I'm always drawing little horrible charts and graphs and renderings that my design team's really good at interpreting.
Okay. How about you, Nolan?
So pretty partial to 3 columns. Occasionally go to 4 when we need more. I'm just a big believer in the rule of thirds. And when I train and I have people by hand sketch out some slide makeovers, we do it in a few different ways, but what I sort of introduce them to the concept of columns and the rule of thirds on slides. And we don't go as heavy into it as we're going now. But what I do is I say, okay, you're gonna make over the slide with pen and paper, and I put up on the screen a series of slides from slide docs or a series of pages, which is Nancy Duarte's book on creating print documents with PowerPoint. So this is when we're creating print slides or print documents, and I put them up, and some are 2 column and some are 3 column, and I say, go ahead and steal from something that you see up on screen. But choose 2 column or 3 column. And then at the end, when I look at it, I always ask, who chose 2 column, who chose 3 column? About 75% people choose 3 columns, and the rest choose 2. But again, it's just that first, it's baby steps, you know, in the trainings, but it's that very first thing. Before you do anything, choose how you're going to set the slide up. Three columns I just find to be very flexible and simple.
When you do that, when you train, I'm sorry, I'm going to back up. Do you use color coding when you create your guides?
I haven't. That was introduced a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And it No, you can change the color of guides now, not on the grid, the PowerPoint's built-in grid, but on guides. And I just find all those colors just get a little confusing and cluttery to my eyes. So I tend not to.
Do you use them, Sandy?
I do. You can turn them off, obviously. So when I'm training, I often I'll start with them and then I'll turn them off because they can be overwhelming. It becomes part of the slide and a lot of cognitive overload. But I apply color-coded guides to differentiate, for example, the title slide, section slide. I create a closing slide, agenda. Those might be a little bit different. So I use color for those.
Oh my gosh, I love the colors. They're like use them all. So here's an example, actually. So I said we're going to create a five column area, and we're going to kind of use a rule of thirds in the fact that content is going to span two or three of the columns. But when you create five columns, that means the zero point, the zero y-axis line is not one of your columns. I mean, you can't use, because, you know, it's five. It doesn't work to be mathematically originating from the zero point. So we make the zero point a different color. So you still have that, where's the center of my slide, but it's a different color than the other guides. You can kind of say, so you can kind of visually see, those are my five columns that I want to design within. And then the other one, you know, we're going to talk about gutters in a minute, aren't we? I'll just say this. Gutters will, you know, because a lot of times you don't want to start at the very edge of a slide. So we're going to create the gutter and we'll put the four guides, you know, the top area, horizontal top and bottom, vertical left and right. And we'll make those like yellow generally. And that becomes the gutter. Like no actual content should be outside this area. Well, so we're using the color coding to kind of, it's a simpler use of it, but it's a very strategic. And then the first slide of a template says, you know, kind of explains that it's a little legend. Hey, these are on here. When you turn it on, you're going to see a lot, you know, and here's why. I really like the fun. And I'm just jumping all over today. Jamie's tool also lets you do coloring within it. The U-Tools guides element also has a color. It kind of leverages that color and says, doesn't it? Hold on. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Oh, no, it's not in the dialogue. It's not in the dialogue when you create them. It's when you select one, you can, hold on. Oh no, he lets you do groupings of guides. That's what it is. Okay, sorry, wrong topic. So I really, really do like the colors, and we do make use of them because the colors indicate different elements. Mark, maybe this is, wait, where are we at? Where are we? Oh, color coding. Default column versus, that's text box.
That's the next one.
All right.
I was going to use this as a transition to talk about the gutters.
Well, let's.
So yeah, maybe we should just jump to gutters. Let's talk about gutters right now, because I just kind of said that's how I set them up, and there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. Somebody else, Nolan, what do you think about gutters in PowerPoint?
Gutters. Okay. So
or gutters as a design element. What do you think about it?
Well, because I think there are a couple of definitions. When I hear gutter, that to me is the space between text columns. And that's what we mentioned, I think, up front. If you make a text box, if you have a text box in PowerPoint, you can turn that into columns all within one text box. And the PowerPoint doesn't use the term gutter. It uses the term spacing. And this is why if you do that, you can't just use the pull-down presets. You have to go to more columns, because the default it puts in is a zero spacing. In other words, a zero. Yes.
There is no such thing.
Gutter. Right. It doesn't work. So you're like, your text is smacked up against each other. So you always have to go in and manually set that. So that's one term for a gutter. But I think as you've been saying, a gutter is also, in other words, a margin, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
On the slide.
Yeah. I think that's the more common way. So a gutter, you know, from print design, I did a lot of book design. I think you designed in that print realm, but you know, so a gutter is critical in the setup ahead of the actual content of layout of, like, say you're doing a novel or a traditional book, a manual, an instruction manual. You need a safe area for the content in the center between the two pages. So one, it's used for print. And it's the section between, what's the word I'm looking for? When you have two pages on in InDesign, you have two pages, your left and right pages, I don't have InDesign open. Okay, never mind. So you need a safe area in the middle of the book, because that's where, you know, the spine is, the binding is, right, and the pages curl down and in there. There's no lie flat books with most binding options. So you have this area where it's not visible because it literally curves down and in. You don't want your content in there. People get very frustrated when they have to like kind of smush the book down to see the words in there, and it, you know, it ruins the ability to read quickly and all this other stuff. It's makes that inner area pretty non-functional. Well, that's your gutter area. Those are the margin, if you will, in PowerPoint terms, where you're not going to put your content. For PowerPoint slides, it's kind of more of a projection consideration, and it's the outer edge, because projection is generally you overshoot to a screen so that you fill the whole screen, so there's no edges not there. So if you have content to the very, very edge of your slide, it may not be actually seen when projected. Yeah. Luckily, LED walls and a lot of other display technologies are changing that, where it's truly edge to edge. But, you know, so it kind of becomes your safe area, to use the video term. So with print design, gutters generally on the inside. With slide design, it's generally the margin on the outside of the area. Just make sure content's not cut off.
Even so, with some LEDs, I have edges cut off sometimes.
It can. Well, see, there's another dilemma, and that's a whole technical thing. LED walls are basically built of Lego blocks. I mean, they're squares or rectangles, and they don't always end up being the exact pixel count of what you're going to do with projection. So 1920 by 1080 is not generally what you're going to get when you're building an LED wall. So a lot of times the content it's coming out of your computer, but it's never going to the wall because that set of pixels is not there, or they have to squish it and make things, you know, not, you know, your circle doesn't look quite like a circle because they squished it to make all the pixels fit within it. So there are very big technical considerations. Again, the idea of a gutter, and we use generally yellow guidelines to say, this is your gutter. Don't go live content outside of this. I mean, there can be designing and stuff, but just plan on not being seen. So gutters are important, but they're not really a feature. When you open up like an InDesign document, it literally says, you know, what are your, you can define a gutter right there. You know, what's the gutter all the way around? Is it uniform? Do you need more on the one edge than the other edge? So things like that. And it doesn't exist in PowerPoint. So you kind of have to take the concept and make it work. And we do it with guides.
And then again, just to go back to the way I usually think of it, gutter being the space between columns. This is why when you see, if you can't, I mean, you can, but if you just draw your horizontal lines, if you just draw, let's say, like two evenly spaced on the screen to get three columns, that might be fine for images as you start aligning them to those lines. But the moment you start trying to align two text boxes next to each other, you're quickly going to see like, oh, they're touching. I need to space them out. How do I do that? And that's why so often in professional grid setups, you'll see two lines close to each other. It'll mm-hmm. be basically all your grids will be in pairs. So it's two little, you know, lines together, and then a couple inches away, another two little lines, and the space between those two little lines, that's the gutter that allows you to put text boxes next to each other without actually touching.
Well, that'd be the concept of the literally labeled margin. You know, every text box is a mini Word document is the way I describe it. And you can have a left margin, right margin, top margin. Right. So if you butt two text boxes together, the words wouldn't touch if you had a left and right margin set. There would be an inner thing. Now, that being said, we set most of our text boxes to be a zero margin.
Zero, right. Yes.
Because exactly. We actually want it. But if we're creating a multi-column and we're going to butt it up because PowerPoint does make it easier to do that, kind of more for that sensory overload of having too many guides, we'll use an inner margin for some templates just to say –
That's
the text
point.
Boxes yeah, can butt, but they can't. But then you run into images. Do the images butt together? And, you know,
right.
And then the images don't align with the text. If the text is inset, you know, quarter of an inch, then the image is not aligned with that. So, yeah.
And then you go, oh, this will be easy. I'll just add an outline to the image. So, you know, it'll snap to the thing. And then you'll quickly find that PowerPoint has a huge bug, in my opinion, where it snaps to the edge of the photo and the outline is outside of it. So then all of a sudden you get overlapping content if you try and do what we were just talking about. Okay, enough ranting about that little problem.
Well, so as a rule, I think I do what both of you do. I make sure I have an outer margin for the slides. However, I set up the grid inside the margin to reflect zero margins in the text boxes. So I will use gutters inside. Oh my God, that's hard to explain, isn't it?
So you're not butting the text boxes together. You're actually doing the space apart with guides, like Nolan was talking about.
Exactly.
I think that's a more professional way. I think it's more confusing visually to see that many, but I think it's the more flexible way to do things.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for the overall design for me, what was in my head.
No, it totally makes sense to me. I yeah, absolutely. And if you ever get a template like that, you know that a designer spent a heck of a long time making sure that everything was set up, because that takes a lot of time to set up. Hey, did we talk about, oh no, never mind. Hold on. No. Where do we talk about the different levels of guides? Did we already mention that?
No, layout, master, and
oh, good idea.
You know, yeah. Okay.
Let's just,
so take it. On that, Sandy, did we already mention, so we talked about how you can color code guides, but there, you know, there's the three levels of guides. Did we talk about that?
Well, I referenced it a little bit in how I will set up my color, use my colors, but
hey, I talked about it completely in my head already. So,
okay. Well, specifically what it means is you can set up guides on the master level. So the, you know, when you open your slide master, the number one slide thumbnail is marked number one. You can set it up there. Then you can go even deeper and you can set it up on the individual layouts, or you can close the master completely and you can set up your guides, your grid on individual slides.
And that is where I do the color coding. I said I'll do the margin or the gutter, the outer area. We'll do that in yellow. I'll do that on the master slide. So when you're working at a master layout, it's still there, but you can't actually change it. I mean, it's not accessible on a layout. So you can add other guides based on that layout's needs. So I think the reason I do like colors and color coding is because they are hierarchical in the fact that you do have that master slide set of guides you can add that can't be, you know, they kind of become locked, if you will. And locking is something missing in PowerPoint in general, but you can kind of lock those guides because they can only be changed on the master and you color code them. Then you have layout level guides. And then anybody that's designing a specific slide, they can add guides to that slide. I really actually think this feature, when it was updated, was really well thought out. I mean, it's got a lot of flexibility for us, the designer, putting together a template, and for the end user to not make a mess of things. Now, there is no undo. That's a big deal. If you move a guide, you can't control Z to snap it back to the
spot. Drives me up a wall.
Yeah. Again, just the ability, you know, Illustrator, Photoshop, every other program, you can lock the guides. Illustrator obviously does it better than anything else in the world, but okay, never mind. That was a bad topic. What else? What did we miss? We have to go back to one.
Well, so let's.
Oh, the multi-column one. Do we want to talk about that?
No, I don't think we need to talk about that one. But I do want to talk about when you set up a grid. Do you make any kind of effort, or should we make any kind of effort to help our users? Let's say a template set up on a grid and you want to ensure users use it. How do you do that? Or do you not at all? Nolan,
I got totally distracted by something.
I love it. I love it.
All right. So did you just ask the last question? Troy's
question? Sandy's going to ask it again. Go for it again, Sandy.
Okay. Sorry.
We've talked about creating grids using guides in PowerPoint and setting up gutters. It's a no-brainer for us as designers to do that, but how do you ensure, if at all, that your audiences use that a grid?
Yeah, the people, the ultimate users.
Oh, the users, excuse me. Yeah,
so I think we're talking mostly about template design rather than one-off. So it's tough. And so we were just, we were just working with this 12-column grid, and we were having the discussion, a few of us, about whether the average user is even going to know about it or know what to do with it, like the way a professional designer would. And we kind of agreed they wouldn't, but we're going to keep it there. I've seen in the past people, generally we have included the grid, and again, we set it up as just lines, as actually on a master layout, just to show them this is what's going on, and then they can turn on the guides if they want. Mm-hmm. In the past, I have seen, and I think we've done a little guidance page, like a tutorial, like here's the grid and you should align it to whatever. But honestly, I feel like I've just stopped doing that because you're really starting to get into design education. And I felt like it just ended up being too much and like people couldn't.
I think you got to reel it in and decide what it is you're going to cover, because we'll include, like I said, that tutorial slide. We don't call it a tutorial. We don't call it a how-to, but it's a we kind of make it. Well, anyways, it's a single slide in the template that literally points to the guides and says, here's what their colors are. Here's the rules they create. And all that really is doing is creating a very simplified concept of a grid to presentation slide layouts. So we tend to give people the absolute minimal amount of information to kind of create rules in their head. And what they're really doing is they're applying design principles to it without even realizing it. So yeah, you gotta make it pretty simplistic, because you gotta count your audience is going to be pretty varied. I mean, there's not many designers at the corporate level, like professionally educated designers, that are going to receive slides and they're going to work on it. What's even more ironic is that when you do give a presentation to a designer, they don't work in PowerPoint and they suddenly think none of the rules of design apply. I don't get that mentality, but it happens. I mean, do you guys see that? Hear that?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
So we make it really, really simplistic. Or you can go to that other end, like the company, the corporate one I was talking about, where in order to work on anything, you go through a 2-hour brand training, which is basically, here's our colors, here's our fonts, here's the rules, and here's the grid. That's 1 hour of the 2-hour training. You know, we can't do that to our PowerPoint users, because PowerPoint is supposed to be simple, easy, and fast.
Right.
It really isn't if you're going to do professional stuff. So it's a big, I think it's a challenge. I mean, we can set it all up. That's challenge number one, because a lot of templates just, even if they adhere to the idea of a grid, they don't really set it up. They don't add guides. They don't have a rationale behind it. Or they make it at the slide level and it's not even set up on the master slide with placeholders to say, this is where things should be. And then we've got the whole education of the, you know, a very large user base. So they are totally critical. And our job is to make it as easy and intuitive as possible, is the way I view it.
You know, you're right. There is usually that large user base. I've mentioned before, when I turn over my templates, I provide a 1-hour training webinar. It's usually up to only 10 people. They have to be power users or influencers. If there's anything, you know, if it's launched company wide and they want me to train on it, that's completely different. But during my typical handoff training, I'll briefly discuss the concept. This is 3 minutes max, maybe even less, but I'll discuss the concept of the grid, and that every single element on each slide is there because of the grid. And so all the work is already done for them. I try to introduce it from the perspective of, you don't need to be putting text boxes and trying to align it, because it's already done for you and it's done on a grid. I'll even turn on the grid for a little bit just to show them, and then to turn them off. I'll tell them whether it's on that training or if it's in directional placeholders to not move anything. So, you know, it certainly doesn't ensure that they use a grid, but at least I've started to create that awareness. Mm-hmm. Makes me feel better too, because I've told them how to do it. And if they don't, then well...
So you're inspiring me, Sandy. We should try to educate more, a little bit more on grids.
Grids, guides, and gutters, powerful tools in the designer arsenal. We, as the designers, need to be aware of them. And then we kind of need to bend the power of PowerPoint to implement them, because some of them exist. Some of them exist in what I'll say, not a fully functional format. And sometimes they just don't exist at all, like gutters. And we have to find a way to, you know, give that information over to our end users. I'm actually really impressed with the fact that the three of us think about these things very, very similar, but we all have different approaches to implementing them in PowerPoint, which kind of speaks to the power of PowerPoint in that it's a very flexible program, and we need to continue to put these elements in place for all the end users to have some sort of consistency element that comes from that professional background of design applied to presentation design. And so everybody can create consistent, hopefully beautiful, not overcomplicated, and easy for the audience to see and use and understand slides. So, hey, thanks, Sandy, Nolan, for conversation time. I appreciate it. It is, it's always great to talk design and design PowerPoint. And we are going to do some pro and tech tips, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody back here in a couple of weeks.
Okay, so Troy, do you have any tech tips or pro tip for today?
Okay, pro and tech tips. I'm going to do a pro tip, and it's a pro travel tip. I've been on lots of international flights this month, just wrapping up it's been kind of fun. Lori and I have kind of tagged projects over in Europe. So we've spent a week in Prague, we spent a week in Budapest, and we spent most of a week in Vienna. And that means a lot of international flights getting there because I am West Coast based and Europe is closer to the East Coast. So here's my travel tip. Have you guys ever heard of or used Dreamwater?
No.
No.
Have not.
Don't really? Know what it is. Okay. It's like the opposite of 5-Hour Energy. You know, the little bottles of 5-Hour. It's literally the same bottle, but it's like nice, calming white and lavender colors. It's just an all natural melatonin drink that just kind of helps put you to ease and sleep. And I love it. You don't actually have to buy in the little bottles anymore. They now make like little, little packets you pour into the water bottle, your water or drink, whatever you can get from the airline. They're great. I mean,
so maybe so it's a liquid that puts you to sleep like scotch.
I kind of, it mixes really well with many things, to be very honest. I'll put a link to, I found a link on Amazon that kind of has, this isn't the one I buy, but it's the Dreamwater kit. So you can buy the bottles and the little packets you can mix in. I'll put it there so people can see it, but I use this stuff for a lot of my, if I'm catching a red eye or whatever, I usually grab this and I can fall asleep anywhere. So Lori thinks that this is just all subliminal. It's like, subconscious, like, sorry, because I don't, I get on an airplane, I fall asleep. It's fine. I'm ready to fall asleep, but I like this stuff. It tastes good. It helps me sleep. I feel a little more refreshed. So there it is. Pro tip. If you haven't heard of Dreamwater, I'm not endorsing it or get paid as an endorser. I do recommend it.
Sandy, what do you have?
Oh, sorry, I just bumped into my microphone. I am going to stay on the theme of today's podcast and recommend a book I have called Best Practices for Graphic Designers, Grids and Page Layouts. It's by Amy Graver and Ben Jura. We'll put a link in the notes, but it's just a very simple, well laid out, well thought out, basic guide for how you can create grids in your work. And it applies to PowerPoint. I mean, it does not specifically. They don't write it for PowerPoint, but you can make the leap to PowerPoint.
Nice. So my tip is a little PowerPoint thing that for some reason I just realized or knew but didn't really know. So you can make rounded corners in PowerPoint bar charts if you want. The way to do it is you add an outline to the chart, which is not something we usually do. But if you add an outline in the exact same color as your fill, you can then increase the size of that outline like a lot to, 4, 5, 6, 8 point. And as long as your outline is set to join, I'm sorry, the join option on the outline, as long as that's set to round, that will in effect round the corners, not, majorly, but in a nice little soft way. So that's a nice little
good idea. Nice hack.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Our website is tlccreative.com. Our PowerPoint presentation blog has lots of content now, thepowerpointblog.com. And we regularly post pictures, kind of behind the scenes stuff of us out and about or just funny presentation industry stuff. Facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is interested in on-site presentation or data viz training, drop me a line or go to nolanhamescreative.com.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website or blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, and I'm on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as @PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.